Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers cornerback Ryan Smith has been suspended without pay for the initial four games of the 2019 season for a violation of the league's policy on performance-enhancing substances. Entering his fourth season with the Bucs, Smith has played in 31 games with 16 starts, with 99 tackles and one interception over the last two seasons. Forward Michael Ferland signed a four-year, $14 million contract with the Canucks yesterday that has an average annual value of $3.5 million. Ferland has 40 points in 71 regular season games with the Hurricanes this last season. Eden native forward Alex Ifalo signed a two-year, $4.85 million contract with the Kings yesterday. Ifalo had 33 points in 82 games with LA last season, is second in the NHL. He has 58 points in 157 NHL games and one goal in three Stanley Cup playoff games. The Clippers announced yesterday that they have signed Kawhi Leonard without releasing contract details. However, it was reported that Leonard has chosen a shorter contract with LA, signing a three-year, $103.1 million deal that includes a player option for the third season. Romania's Simona Halep has reached her first Wimbledon final by beating Ukraine's Alina Svitolina 6-1, 6-3 in the semifinals today. Halep will face American Serena Williams, who will play in the Wimbledon final for the 11th time and will be looking for her eighth title at the All England Club. Williams, a 23-time Grand Slam singles champion, beats the Czech Republic's Barbara Strykova 6-1, 6-1 in the semifinals today. That's your sports updates. Serena Williams still killing it, Brownie.
37 years old, Steve.
I mean, there's been nobody like her. Nobody.
Nobody's just a power pack.
She is.
She's still cranking it at like 107 on the serve. It's just stupid.
One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown. We're talking today about what the future of the feature NFL running back. We've been debating it back and forth. Now we're going to have a little chance to take a break from the heated debate about how much a running back is worth and what
we will
the ones,
get back to it, though.
We will get back to that. It's been fun to talk about. We also have this new thing we're going to talk about today, and it's called What's for Lunch? What's for lunch? Are you going to eat this for lunch, or are you going to throw it in the garbage? Are you going to eat it or chuck it? And the first thing, we're going to have some topics that come up, and Brownie and I are going to debate these topics. And they don't necessarily have to do with football, but they do have big implications for all of us everywhere. These are major life-changing.
Universal topics.
Yeah, all right, there we go. Universal topics. Okay. What's for lunch? Number one, new CBA gets done before games are lost. New NFL collective bargaining agreement is going to get done before any games are lost. You eating that for lunch?
I am going to eat that because I think there is, like we talked about the other day when we were discussing CBA, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, we were talking about how the NFLPA as an entity cannot all be thinking in the same way because the salary structure is so vast based on position, based on talent level,
career length,
that there are too many agendas where they're going to get to a point where there's going to be a majority or a vocal minority that say, we're not missing games. I need my checks.
Right.
And they're going to buckle or do something. And so missing games, I don't think it's going to get to that. I just don't see it. I know the NFLPA, they always put this out in the media. We've been telling our players for 3 years to put together savings, you know, so they can get through an entire season with their savings without getting paid for playing games so we can get what we need for the future. And
like you said
the other day, the NFL running back who's 26 isn't worried about the next generation of players. He's worried about getting his check on Monday.
Right.
And because of that, I think ultimately the owners win. The players don't get everything they want because it's more important to get their check on Monday than to get everything they want on their list of, you know, wants and must-haves for the new CBA.
Here's
so
the thing.
I say eat it.
I do too. I'll eat this as well. But for the other side of the aisle, as much as it's worth to the players, the $185 or $4 million salary cap that it is, think about having the – yes, that's right. Think about how many people how much money the owners are looking at missing any of these games.
Right.
Plus it damaged – and plus the television partners have protections against work stoppages. The owners won't get anything if they're not playing these games. If the revenue's not coming in, they're going to get hurt and hurt bad. And it starts with the TV money, and that's where it is. So both these times,
I still think players feel it more than the owners.
Oh, sure.
I think they'll feel it.
But here's it may be more urgent for them, but the owners are going to be, even if they're coldly robotic about it, they know they've got a good thing going. They may push it to the final hour, but I think on both sides, it is so valuable to have these games on when they're supposed to be on and everybody doing what they're supposed to be doing. No matter what the details of the CBA say, I don't think there's any question that the owners are as much in this as the players are. So I think both sides have so much to lose by stopping these games and not having a work stoppage. I don't think there's any question that this CBA gets done before they start losing games. Yeah. So both of us are eating that for lunch.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's
that was a good appetizer.
I think that is a no-brainer. I think, okay, now, NBA, this is what's for lunch number two. NBA approves the use of coaches' challenges for the 2019-2020 season. I'm saying I'm chucking this. This is garbage. It's garbage. They already use the replay exactly the way it should be used right now. I don't think they need to expand it. There's no reason to think that these games are getting out of hand. If you're in the final 2 minutes, everything's reviewed anyway, and it's going to be taken out of the coach's hands anyway. I just think it's, for lack of a better word, and to use a big syllable word, it's superfluous. They don't need it. They do not need it. This is putting perfume on a pig. It ain't going to help. All just right. Leave it off. Just leave it off. They don't need this new rule, and I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know what they're trying to react to. I don't know what they think is wrong with the game. It was I'm not an NBA guy, as you know.
Yeah.
I like the NBA, but I don't have a team. I'm not watching
You're
games.
Kind of a casual,
right?
Fan.
I'm watching all the playoffs, sure. And this last NBA playoff season was phenomenal from start to finish. Every round was awesome. And I like the way the players are moving. I like, the fact that, hey, who's going to be good? You get a chance to really – they really got it going on. Just stop. Okay. Yeah. Just leave it alone for a minute.
And I'm in the same boat. I'm chucking this as far as I can throw it because the thing with the replay system, I don't even like the way it is now. The last 2 minutes of an NBA game or even a college basketball game gets so bogged down with timeouts – to get the proper sets and, we got to get a basket on this set, so let's call a timeout, get everybody organized. I mean, the last 2 minutes of an NBA game can take a half an hour. That was before any of this replay stuff ever even came into being. And now, you're reviewing, who did it go off last? Okay, I can stomach that.
Possession's cool.
I can stomach that.
Yeah.
But they've taken it another step, and they've gone too far. They've stepped over the line. And now you are going to have breaks in the action that are so detrimental to the momentum of the game and who might have the advantage at that particular time. And you're going to kill the product. It's going to be so anticlimactic. When a guy comes flying in on a ball caroming off the rim and throws it down from the rafters. And they're going to say, I want to challenge whether that was in the cylinder. Come on.
Right. I'm totally with you. They start down a slippery slope and they can't do it. So we love that this NFL CBA is going to get done this year. We're both eating that for lunch. We're also chucking the NBA's new use of coaches' challenges. Now, another one within the AFC East. What's for lunch number three? The Dolphins over-under at 5. Are you buying it? It says the Dolphins will win 5 games in 2019.
Five games. Well, they're playing the They're playing the NFC East out of conference, and they're playing the AFC. What are we playing? The North, right? Oh no, NFC East,
AFC North.
AFC North. So that's Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. Yeah.
Yeah, Miami Dolphins will win five games.
I'm chucking it. They're not winning five games.
Oh, I think they will. Nah. Yeah? I think the Dolphins
can
win
four.
Listen, five games, you can win five games. I don't think there's any question. I think they're going to be good enough to win five games.
That defense is a mess.
They've been accused of tanking. They've got all that stuff going on. Their defense, they've lost a lot of talented players. It's a new coaching change. It's a first-time head coach. It's all of that stuff going on. Ryan Fitzpatrick will give them a spark early in the season. They're going to surprise one or two teams. There's two. And then they're going to get this guy, Josh Rosen, in. And Josh Rosen, I don't know if you see some of his highlights from Arizona last year. The guy can sling it. They're going to get better.
I've always liked him as a quarterback.
They're going to get better throughout the season. So I think if Fitzpatrick gives you maybe two wins early in the season and Rosen squeaks out three wins late all through the rest of the season, yeah, I think they'll win five games.
You're eating it.
I am. I'm going to have that for lunch. I'm going to think the Dolphins are going to be better than the dumpster fire than they think. Yeah. All right. Now, what's for lunch number four? Jimmy Garoppolo will win the Comeback Player of the Year award.
That's it. He's a good candidate. He's certainly a good candidate.
And that's what you have to do. You kind of got to go down the list
guys. Trying to think of other people and off the top.
Only
of
if Alex Smith comes back.
Well, yeah, that would trump it because that guy's – Yeah. If he can play after that, man. Garoppolo was playing great in the games that he started his first go-round with the 49ers, and they were all amped up about what he was going to be in 18. And then, obviously, it got cut short.
On a big run that he had, non-contact, but he was he was doing it again. I mean, he started off, he was on fire.
Yeah. Because I right now cannot think of a better candidate, short of Alex Smith, who I don't think is going to be back this year, I will eat that, and I think he's a guy that can lift the level of players around him. I think he's that good a quarterback, or can be, and he's got a great OC in Shanahan to work with. So I will eat that, and I will say yes, he will.
I agree with you. I think the Niners are going to take a step forward this year. They put together a really good defensive front that's going to give them a chance to play.
They got a lot of beef on that D-line.
They're going to get a chance to play some complimentary football. Garoppolo is going to give them a chance to play with a lead quite a bit. And there's no question, if the Niners can get into the playoffs and do all of that stuff, which they could. Arizona's in that division.
Seattle.
The Seattle Seahawks are in that division.
And the Rams.
Yeah,
they're making the playoffs? Is that what I just heard?
They got
you
a chance at it. I think they're really going to take a step forward. Wow. I saw them play against the Rams last year, and they gave them all they could handle in a Super Bowl year for the Rams. Now, it was in San Francisco, I'll say that. But Shanahan's going to give them something.
Yeah.
I think this is a team, and here's what I'm saying. They're going to be a much improved football team, and because they're going to be a much improved football team, they're going to be in the conversation late in the year. So even if they don't get to the playoffs, they're going to be in the hunt for a wild card or whatever late in the year. And Garoppolo's going to be the face of the franchise. It's going to be seen by that. And that's really, let's face it, it's a Comeback Player of the Year. You got to play well, and you got to be on a team that people care about. And I think that's why I'm going to say yes. Garoppolo is going to be the Comeback Player of the Year. That is what's for lunch right there. The CBA gets done before games are lost. We both had that one as an appetizer. The NBA approves the use, and we both threw that one in the garbage. They approved the use of the coach's challenge for the 2019-20 season. And we split on the Dolphins. Brownie doesn't like them to win five games. I think they will win five games. Both of us think Jimmy Garoppolo's got a shot at winning the Comeback Player of the Year award.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. It's a pretty good menu for our first What's for Lunch.
It's kind of like a What Have You Done For Me Lately. It's like people forget, you know what? That Garoppolo kid's not bad. He's a pretty good guy. Like
he made such a huge splash when he started
off the
out
radar
there.
With an injury, and it's like everybody,
Think about it. We couldn't even think of another guy eligible for it.
Yeah.
We can't even think of another guy eligible for it.
I'm just drawing a blank. I don't know.
And also, we're talking about this. What's the future of the feature NFL running back? What's going to happen to the running backs in the NFL? Is that still going to happen? Is that still going to be the case? Is everybody going to need one of those guys? Or is it going to be more of a, let's see, what do you call it? more of a running back by committee? Is it going to be evolve all the way away from what it has been in years past, decades past? 38% of you say, no, it's always going to be part of the game. 10% say, nah, it's no longer a must-have. 27% say it's good to have, but don't give the guy a second deal. Don't overpay for those guys. And 25% say, yeah, they're too easily replaceable. And some of those, obviously, you can agree with more than one of those answers. But I think most people already say that, yeah, they're always going to be a part of the game. And I think I agree with that. They always are going to be a part of the game. But I also say, too, they're all too easily replaceable, even in this day and age. I've said that throughout our conversation here today on the show. I just think they're too easy to find. I mean, you've got guys, you know, certainly you got a guy like Saquon Barkley, number two pick in the draft, and the guy is a stud. Yeah. Ezekiel Elliott, number four overall in the draft, and he's a stud. But you've got other guys like Alvin Kamara is a fifth-round draft pick.
Third-round draft pick. Yeah.
You know, you've got other guys that have
and
emerged.
He's dynamic. I mean, like,
think about the guys at the Bills with Gillislee, who played well here, and then went to New England. Then you had guys like Carlos Williams, who came in for 1 year and flash in the pan. You get guys like that who can come in and do good things for your franchise, and you're paying them literally pennies on the dollar compared to a guy like LeSean McCoy, Adrian Peterson, right. Todd Gurley, Johnson in Arizona. All these guys. I mean, you just don't need to do that to get production out of that position. I think that's where I sit on the entire matter. So it's interesting to talk about. We've been hashing it out all day.
So what's on the tweet sheet here?
The tweet sheet, the future of the feature NFL running back brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Here's what's next on the tweet sheet. The Bills Monster says, I believe there will be a future at running back as a hybrid-like player. Brian Westbrook from Philly was before his time with his pass-catching ability. Thurman was the best blocking running back of all time. The future at that spot will be someone who can do all of the above. But if you got a guy, and here's the thing, Bills Monster, I get you. You'll get a guy who can do all of that stuff. Well, then you got a feature back.
Right.
And then he is a guy that you pay a second contract.
And if he's doing all these things, he's probably getting 300 carries or at least 300 touches, you know, via reception and running. And now the decision has to be made. You want to use him like the Cowboys use Zeke Elliott, or do you value him so much you want to pace him so when it comes time to pay the second contract, you know you're still going to get good value on the dollar because he's still fresh and you haven't worn those tires down too much.
I think what happens is, and here's the thing, you can have this philosophy as a general manager and as a franchise, say, all right, we've got this young guy. Let's we got a guy like LeSean McCoy is a young running back, can do everything, catch it, can make guys miss, not really a physical inside the tackles runner, but certainly an elite back. Mm-hmm. Then you got a guy like Zeke Elliott, who is a hammer. And we got this big offensive line. We're going to, you know, so you got both those guys, right? So you got to make a call as to what you're going to need around him. Or you can say, listen, we're going to use this kid up. This Zeke Elliott, we're going to give him the ball 300 times a year until his contract's up, and then we're going to throw him away. Or you say, all right, now we can, as soon as you got LeSean, and these guys are kind of replaceable, let's just keep getting a rookie first round or a rookie third round or fifth round draft pick or a rookie free agent behind him, and we'll give him some garbage carries so we can nurse LeSean McCoy through a 10-year career instead of using him up in a 5 or 6 year career.
And Melvin Gordon, who kind of sparked this whole conversation today, is a pretty darn good all around back. I mean, he's got a lot of receptions in his
big,
first few seasons.
Fast, elusive, can catch it.
Yeah, I mean, he can run an inside or outside, and he does everything. And so are you giving that guy a giant second contract? That's what sits on the table for the Chargers now. And Gordon has kind of already lit the fire and is already holding the Chargers' feet to it, saying, I better get a giant contract or I'm not even coming to training camp this year.
Is there any way – and we're going to have Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus on the show later today. All they do is look at film and evaluate guys on their production,
their metrics,
their metrics, all this stuff that is behind the scenes, and all the subtexts and the data that comes out of these games. And it's interesting to know how – I guess you don't really have a problem doing it for a guy like Todd Gurley when you know the guy is, A, going to be productive and your offense runs – 3 times better when he's in there because of what it forces the defense to do. But then you've got the other side of the sword that says, well, the guy's good, but he's got an arthritic knee, and he's only going to play 12 games. and you get down at the end of the season and you're 8-4 chasing your division rival, and you've got four games to go, and he may not be, he may be up or down, he may be able to give you half a game here and there, you know what I'm saying? So then everything changes. Or you get a guy that you say, okay, I'm going to make him the best paid running back in the National Football League, and the guy, awesome, I got $30 million guaranteed. Why am I going to jump into that meat grind? Yeah, why am I going to keep it in gear and put my foot on the gas when I'm already when I've already got my money?
So you're almost so, and I'm sure there are GMs in this league that have a similar philosophy where they say, I'd rather get the hungry to prove himself running back coming out of school that wants to make a name for himself so he can get to a second contract rather than a guy who's going on to his second contract and thinks he's made it, and now that he gets guaranteed money is going to take his foot off the gas.
That's right.
I mean, that's real in this league. I mean, that happens a lot, maybe more than fans even realize. But is it enough to convince an NFL club to back away from somebody like that? Like, if you go down to Dallas and let's just say there's a report that comes out that says Cowboys considering moving away from Elliott. I mean, you have people in the streets with pitchforks and torches.
Damn
fans,
man.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe I've got their fan base a little wrong, but with all the production that he's put together for that franchise, I think he's got some clout. You know, not that what the public says is going to influence Jerry Jones' decision.
There's only one fan you got to worry about, and that's Jerry.
Yeah, right.
So but that's different. That's in Dallas. That is.
Yeah.
In Buffalo, maybe not. Maybe there is a sense of, like, you know, it may cost us season ticket holders if we don't hang on to this guy. Maybe there is a thing like that in Green Bay or Denver or Jacksonville where, you know, if you're gonna sit down a guy or trade a guy of that caliber, you're going to get some financial repercussions from it. But I think that all comes down to leadership and the owner. If you've got a GM who can go in and tell the owner, listen, this is best for our football team, and the owner's smart enough to listen, I don't think the fans' voice will be heard, but it's not going to affect what they think.
Yeah, what they do.
I think you got to when guys' jobs are on the line, like GMs and coaches, you got to trust their judgment because they're not going to do anything that they truly believe isn't going to really help them. And certainly that you need to bounce a lot of different ideas off of them. You don't just, like, listen to them blindly and say, well, what about this? What if this happens? If they've got good answers for you got to listen to them. Their jobs are on the line. It's their reputation. You know, it's – So I fans are great, and I love them, man. The league is nothing without them. Right. But when you've got guys who do this for a living, and they're trying to make these tough calls on whether to, you know, philosophical calls, whether you've got money on one hand and production on the other, and then trying to tell the future, balancing those two, you know?
Yeah.
What's this money going to get me out of this guy after I pay him? That's a big question.
And here's another element of this conversation that we really haven't discussed. You touched on it briefly, but the whole committee idea from the tweet sheet from Ray, he said New England showed at the end of last season that the running game as a featured part of an offense is making a comeback. However, they do it with interchangeable backs and even a fullback, so the feature back is unnecessary. And I think to a certain extent he's right there. There are ways to capably do it with a committee. Provided you have guys that can do certain things. Now, some offensive coordinators would argue that by putting this back on the field or that back on the field, you make your offense more predictable. James White comes on the field, you're believing that the Patriots are probably throwing to him. They're not going to hand him the ball necessarily. And that's all well and good. But I think in the grand scheme of this, this is a case-by-case basis for the running back position. Do you want a feature back? Do you have one? Do you need one? You know, all of those things have to be weighed, as Steve said earlier in the show, based on the quarterback you have, what kind of passing game rank do you have? You know, can you chuck the ball 50 times and win games that way?
It comes down to this, Brownie. Do you believe, if you're going to get this guy to his second contract, do you believe he's the kind of guy that doesn't care about the money, he wants to play?
Right.
Does he want it? Is his goal in life to be great? Because if his goal in life is to be great, the money's secondary to him. He wants to be great. He wants a legacy. He wants to go to the Hall of Fame.
Right.
He wants to go in the Hall of Fame. He wants to be mentioned in the same breath as, you know, Earl Campbell and Thurman Thomas and Barry Sanders and Jim Brown and all those guys. He wants to be in that conversation. If that's what drives the guy, give him the money.
Yeah.
give him the money.
But there is still, and this is probably true at every position, but maybe no more than at any other position than running back, with, you know, Todd Gurley being a perfect example, the injury factor.
Oh, yeah.
I am supremely confident that NFL teams with their analytics departments have broken down the injury rates of every position on their roster and are probably going to go back a lot further than that and probably take it all the way across the league. All 32 teams, all positions, and at those positions, how many games on average are missed by running backs every single season. And if that number is higher than any other position on your roster, it wouldn't shock me in the least if running backs miss more games than anybody else.
What's the future of the feature NFL running back? You can call us at 803-0550 or 1-888-550-2550. We're going to take a break at the bottom of the hour. We might get back into this about some of the there's still more to talk about this. I mean, we've been going at it for a while. I'm loving it. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. Murph's on vacation this week. He'll be back Monday. We're talking about the future of the feature NFL running back, where that's headed. What are you thinking, or how important you think it is? We're taking your phone calls at 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. We're also here, and we're into our brethren here within the building. We've got I want to bring your attention to an article on the website. It's Camp Countdown. You guys I've got this thing going where you're counting down the days to training
right.
camp. And we're at 2 weeks exactly, right?
Yeah.
So
number 14.
Yeah, number 14. Three reasons why Robert Foster's game can take a big leap forward. I think Robert Foster is one of the most intriguing guys on the roster because we saw him last year kind of explode onto the scene. Then you find out when you kind of heard him in training camp. And this got away from me because I was doing the CBS thing and I was out of town, in town. Mm-hmm. And I know you've got your fingers in the roster all the time through training camp and all of that. But all of a sudden, he gets in there and he starts making some catches, right? And and Josh Allen has a little chemistry with him and all that. Yep. Then you find out the guy was cut and then brought back, practice squad, and so they released him completely and then brought him back. And how that affected him and his mentality going forward, I think it's interesting to see how that's going to affect him this year.
Yeah, and really – a lot of people felt like, oh, well, they cut him to teach him a lesson. And Robert, you know, in an interview that I did with him late last season, basically revealed to me that as much as he understood the decision that the team made, he kind of saw the writing on the wall and thought he was going to get cut. But he said what changed his approach to the game was the wake-up call he got from LeSean McCoy in a one-on-one conversation. LeSean mm-hmm. went up to him and basically said, "You're ridiculously talented. We need more from you. You need to do better.
Yeah.
And you're not doing it right now, and you're going to get cut because of it. And you have a finite amount of time to figure it out."
Right.
And he said that was the wake-up call that he needed. So, gets cut, gets put on the practice squad. The entire bye week, week 10 for the Bills last year, he stays in town and throws every day with Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. And the very next week, he's promoted to the active roster. And even though Josh isn't cleared to play and Matt Barkley starts that game, Foster starts as his first 100-yard receiving game of his career, and then it goes from there.
Right. And I think that's, you know, you think about all the ways he's going to get better. Certainly, you know, a deeper core of receivers around him. Maybe he'll be a more consistent target. Maybe he'll catch some underneath. So, you know, you remember him for the long ball. The long passes that he caught, no question. That's one reason it could be. It could be just another year being a professional, you know, coming back and knowing, well, you know, having gone around it, been one lap in the league.
He's got a firm grasp of the offense. His chemistry with Josh Allen is undeniable. And I think the other weapons on offense now are going to keep opponents from putting too much attention on Robert Foster. We've talked about this on this show before, Steve. You have John Brown on one side, Robert Foster on the other. You're going to play cover two and just roll coverage over the top so those guys don't beat you for a 60-yard touchdown? Okay, fine. We're going to Cole Beasley you to death.
Right.
Zay Jones you to death in the middle of the field. You want to go one-on-one there with linebackers or a nickel with Cole Beasley and Zay Jones? You know, go four wide and do that?
Well,
you want us to run the football down your throat? You know, I mean – you're going to have your two safeties playing high to prevent those 60-yard bombs, okay, fine. We're going to run the ball at you.
I get all that. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out because Bob Foster, I mean, we call him Bob in the building. I don't know if he actually goes by
Bob. I call him Robert.
But do you call him Robert? I call him Robert, too.
Yeah, I know. You're very informal.
I know.
With the players.
Okay, so Robert Foster, think about this. You've got Cole Beasley, John Brown. They're going to be on the field. Is Zay Jones going to be on the field? Well, there's three wides. And he got Tyler Croft, yeah. LeSean McCoy, Franco. Robert Foster might, after having such a breakout second half of the season last year, he may have a hard time getting on the field and staying there. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. I hear you.
I'm not saying there's nothing that says he can't beat any of those guys out.
I think he's going to be on the field.
Who else? You can't have 12 guys out there. Who's the guy that sits down? Is it going to be Zay Jones?
Might be the running back.
McCoy.
Might be going empty.
Yeah, okay.
Might be going 4-by-1.
4-by-1 with Croft? Tyler Croft or Dawson Knox or whatever, and just throw it out.
I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and everybody says, well, they might do this. Listen, they're going to do all of this stuff. They're going to go heavy. They're going to go light. They're going to go 21%.
It's going to depend on the week.
Exactly. I mean, all this is going to be in the toolbox. But so if they do have a week where Robert Foster's on the field, John Brown's on the field, Cole Beasley's on the field, Zay Jones is on the field, Tyler Croft is on the field, LeSean McCoy's on the field. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good group.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty good group. I don't know how we're going to run out of that unless you've got this offensive line that comes together and all of a sudden says, oh, wow, hey, we did fix that problem, right?
And
which could happen.
Right, and I think they also recognize that they were deficient when it came to receivers who could block. And that's why Zay Jones made a point this offseason to bulk up.
He's a little bigger,
and add 8 to 10 pounds of lean muscle mass because he knows he's going to be one of those inside receivers, and he better set that edge for that running back downfield. You know what I mean? Give him that alley down the sideline.
Yep.
Because if they miss Robert Woods anywhere, it is in the run blocking game downfield because he's one of the best I have ever seen at it. Yeah. He's really, really good at it. He's still doing it in L.A. right now. Right. But speaking of L.A., Steve, that's where the ESPYs were.
Oh, yeah. So that was – let me just wrap that up. Say camp countdown number 14. Yeah. That was three reasons why Robert Foster's game might take a big leap forward. I recommend you go to the website and read that. Written by Nate Mendelson, one of the interns here, who's actually doing – I like that. He's doing a pretty good job, actually. You liking him?
We're setting him up. We're putting him in good position to produce good content.
He's not one of those spoon feeders, is he? I mean, you can like tell him to do something.
For the most part.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. He needs, you know, just like all interns, they just need reps. That's it.
Right. Exactly.
He's developing his writing style. He's coming along.
All right. So there you go. Go to the website and catch that article. It's pretty good. But you're right. That's not the only thing that's going on. Last night the ESPYs happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of evolving, right? This event.
It's jumped the sharks.
Right. That was like, what's this thing going on with ESPYs? And now it's this thing where the sports world, ESPN in particular, has kind of decided they're going to be Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, really mimic the Academy Awards, right? I mean, they got this big, shiny
stuff.
I mean, it's
Awards
a big
sports,
production,
yeah.
Right? It's a big deal.
Yeah, they blow it out.
Right.
And they have a red carpet and the whole thing.
And everybody gets – and I'd say and everybody gets dressed up. They don't get dressed up. They get in costume.
Yeah, I'm really – I don't know. Maybe I'm old school and think for an event like this, get yourself in a sharp suit and look good. And so many of these guys want to show – well, I'm different. I'm the free thinker, you know. I'm waiting for the next person to go Lady Gaga on one of these events and show up in an egg. You know, wear a meat dress.
Meat dress or an egg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, get carried in on a Pharaoh's throne or something.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for that. But OBJ.
What is he doing?
I'm just going to say this. OBJ's decision was horrific. Because I'm going to tell you right now, Steve, and our MSG viewers are seeing his outfit. I'm just going to explain it like this. It's somewhere between a Walmart vest that Walmart employees have to wear in the store and a grocery store plastic bag that you carry your stuff out in. Because it's
basically
the color of the grocery bag.
Right. It's a, it's
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's khaki, just to be kind.
And it's a swooping neckline where it almost looks like he's wearing a grocery store bag.
Right. It looks like two
handles.
There
is a stupid saddlebag size pouch on the front.
It's a backpack wearing on the front almost. And
It's
idiotic. Awful, man.
It's
it looks
idiotic.
Awful.
I really want to know the thinking behind this. Who came up with this idea? OBJ obviously signed off on it.
It had it's on this chest. It's got a little white red thing. It says Prada. Prada put that on.
And that's why he wears it. You put the
joke.
Name on it.
It is a
These
joke.
Guys will wear any. Oh, it's Prada. All right, I'll wear it. Sure, whatever. I mean, you look.
See, if that was a real world. If that was the real world, it wasn't like this Hollywood thing. You got guys back there going, I'll bet you if we put Prada on it, he'll wear this sack. I'll bet you. And he ain't going to wear that.
It's
you
a put grocery Prada store
on
bag.
You put this Prada on it. You put the name Prada on it. I'll bet I can get OBJ to wear that.
The outfit's redundant.
I know.
He looks like a grocery store bag, and the bag's got a bag on top of it. Like,
it's so awful.
You know, and here's the thing. I saw somebody on Twitter say, well, looks like he's getting ready to go to the movies and have his snacks at the ready. This is even a dumb approach for the movies. You're showing front and center. You're carrying contraband in.
That's exactly right.
And you're not buying anything at the concession stand. You wisely conceal the goodies that you're bringing from home so you don't have to pay $8 for a box of Raisinettes.
So he's got
you're not
the,
doing that.
And it's topped off. He's got a pair of shorts. It comes with a matching pair of shorts.
Oh, yeah. Thank God for that.
You know what it looks like? It really looks like something you'd put a two-year-old in so they could put their own gear. You know, you put your extra diaper in the front of his thing. Let the two-year-old carry his own diaper and his own wipes in the front of it. He's on little short pants.
Yeah. The style.
Nice kicks. I mean, the shoes are the best part about the whole outfit. Maybe the shirt's, nice, tight, white shirt.
I would expect Prada to call this Kangaroo Grocery. That's kind of what we're doing here. We got a giant pouch in the front. We look like a grocery store bag. And
it does look like a utility vest that he's wearing for some shop that he works in. Like
it's
some
horrible.
It looks I mean, you can't.
Horrible.
You're wearing that to an event.
Horrible. Like, I don't doubt that he was comfortable. But holy
physically,
crow,
yeah,
man.
I mean, emotionally,
what are you doing?
Wearing that in public, I'd be an emotional
what
wreck,
are
man.
You
forget the physical
doing?
Comfort.
That is epic fail category
it's just
for me.
So horrible. So
terrible.
Horrible. I'm totally with you on that. I get it. So what are you gonna do?
You gotta try harder than that.
You gotta do better, man.
And
you just gotta do
and
better.
And here's the thing.
You gotta do better.
I understand guys wanting to be different, stand out. Go off the mainstream and
right.
be different.
Be unique. I get it.
I totally get that. But you're off the rails here, buddy.
Yeah, that's
you are off the rails.
That is the quintessential.
It's a formal event at the end of the day.
Quintessential trying too hard. You know?
Terrible.
You right?
Terrible.
All right. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown, One Bills Live. Top of the hour, we've got Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus coming on. We also want to hear from you at 803-0550. What's the future of the feature NFL running back? This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We're talking about the future of NFL feature backs and the running backs in the NFL. We're taking some of your Twitter feedback. We also had a little foyer into the red carpet last night at the ESPYs. You should go online and check out those pictures. It's
OBJ. Woof.
It's unbelievable.
Woof.
And we're also talking about the value of what that position at running back is worth these days and how much is too much. We also have Steve Palazzolo coming on. The Pro Football Focus guys, they're coming on. They get a little pushback once in a while because, and this is what I want to ask Steve about. when he comes on, is they rate these players. They give them grades. Like, for instance, Jerry Hughes was given almost an elite pass rushing, like a second overall
pressure
in the national,
rate, yeah.
a pressure rate in the National Football League. He was number two overall in the entire league. That means everybody. Aaron Donald, Von Miller, all these guys, Joey Bosa. Jerry Hughes was more productive, or at least
by that metric,
ranked higher than these other players. And I want to get Palazzolo to see if he can explain to us how much – first of all, how much pushback they get from – I mean, fans must go bonkers.
I don't think it's
ratings.
The fans. I think there's some players that take issue with some of the things that they come up with, and I'll ask them about that too, because I know Eric Wood always had a bone to pick with them, because his argument was, you don't know what the play is.
Right.
You don't know what my assignment is on this play. How are you going to accurately grade offensive linemen?
That's exactly
right. And I think
right.
that is the one area
– that's hard.
Where PFF, you know, it's very right. subjective and – I don't know if you can
right.
take that stuff to the bank, especially when it comes to offensive linemen.
Right, yeah. Palazzolo, Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, coming up at the top of the hour. We're talking about the future of the NFL running back. We've got some feedback from the tweet sheet from Andrew, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems. He says, I see running backs as a dime a dozen. You can have any caliber player play that position as long as you have a great offensive line in front of them. I think he might – well, Andrew might be –
that's the James Conner argument,
yeah,
isn't it?
He might be exaggerating to make a point, but the point is, listen, those guys, you get a mediocre running back is good. A mediocre NFL running back is good enough if you got a great offensive line. And but it's vice versa as well. If you got a great running back, I don't know how good he's going to be without a great offensive line in front of him. I think it all starts up front. But does a great back do even better than a mediocre back when the line is good? I mean, that's the real question.
James Conner was a third-round pick.
Yeah.
Had more rushing yards last year than Le'Veon Bell had in his final year with Pittsburgh.
Let me just tell you something about this Le'Veon Bell thing. We've been following that case for 2 years now, right? I mean, since he started holding out and wanting more money and turned down the Pittsburgh deal and then held out for his last season in Pittsburgh. So the thing about it is when he gets to the New York Jets, I am almost positive – that the New York Jet offensive line this year is not going to be as good as the Pittsburgh Steeler line that he has been running behind his entire career. The Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line was dominant last year,
I don't think you have to be pretty sure, Steve. I think that is
right.
a take-it-to-the-bank Jets offensive line, not as good as Steelers offensive line. Done deal, Lucille, conversation over.
How is that going to affect a $30 million guarantee that the Jets gave to Le'Veon Bell?
Mm-hmm.
Now he's gonna start running behind, you know,
a
Volkswagen instead of a bulldozer. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's gonna be interesting.
That patient running style is not going to
be patiently
work
getting
there.
Hit in the mouth.
Yeah, because there's gonna be a lot more penetration than he's used to seeing.
Right?
I think so.
I think that's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
Plus, it's a new offense that guys aren't going to have mastered yet at the outset of the season. There are a lot of factors right now that are going against success for Le'Veon Bell. Now, he is supremely talented. I do not debate that for a second.
He's got some gifts.
But the factors working against him, new offense, new offensive line that has been pieced together and is not as good as the Steelers' offensive line. I think that is widely accepted as fact.
Mm-hmm.
And an offense that doesn't have nearly the passing weapons that the Steelers' offense had to keep defenses honest. You don't think you're going to see eight in the box a ton?
Yeah.
I think he is.
I get it. I mean, that it's going to – and with a second-year quarterback, I think it's – I don't know that it's going to go well. Now, certainly, you can spin it any way you want. I mean, we do that every day here with our team. I mean, we see the effort that goes into it, so it's easy for us to spin it positive, you know, and to do the right things and, you know, to see all the effort they put into doing it right and to fixing the problems and anticipating issues, all of that stuff. We see them all the time
right.
here. So it's easy for us to spin it positive. And I'm sure there's people in the Jets organization over in Florham Park that do the same thing. But from out here looking at, I'm not like going, there's a lot of questions that are big.
I'm sitting here going, eh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe your new head coach and
new
offense.
What was our show topic the other day? Which NFL club has the potential to become a powder keg?
A powder keg? They were on the list.
They're on the list.
All right. We're coming up. Coming up next is Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus. He is the senior analyst over there at Pro Football Focus. He's also an NFL draft college football analyst, and he hosts the Pro Football Focus podcast. He's coming up right after the break. This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. We're from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.